Thomas Sharp's a bad guy.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. The cities of Nauvoo, Carthage, and Warsaw, Illinois form a bit of an anti-Mormon triangle. Most Mormons know about the first two cities, but what do you know about the third? Author Brian Stutzman is the first person to write a history of the city of Warsaw, Illinois, and we'll learn more about this anti-Mormon hotbed in our next conversation. So it's going to be very interesting to get acquainted both with Brian and with Warsaw, which I think most Mormons aren't very familiar with. Check out our conversation. Well, welcome to Gospel Tangents. I've got a special guest on. Could you tell us who you are and why you're here?
Okay. My name is Brian Stutzman, and I live in Idle Falls, Idaho. And I wrote a book called The History of Warsaw, Illinois.
Why don't you go ahead and show it to us?
And it just came out a few months ago. Uh-huh. And it's the first book of its kind about Warsaw, Illinois. There was not one written before.
All right. Now, are you a professional historian or anything like that?
No, I'm a businessman, real estate investor. And that's what actually got me interested in Warsaw. Like a lot of your viewers and listeners, many people have been to Nauvoo and been to Carthage. And there's 1,000 books written about Nauvoo and 100 about Carthage. One day we were leaving Carthage, me and my son, and we were driving over through Hamilton over the Keokuk Bridge, and I saw this little green sign that says Warsaw with an arrow. And I thought, you know, I remember reading about Warsaw. There was this newspaper editor named Thomas Sharp, something about a mob, but I couldn't really remember. And so we drove down there. It's about 5 miles south of the Keokuk Bridge, and saw this really quaint, broken down town. And as we drove onto Main Street and got out of our car, there was this building, and it says Warsaw Signal Thomas Sharp Print Museum. And I didn't know anything about the building. And we got out and I looked in, and the roof had collapsed and the floor had collapsed. And on the basement was this press. And I didn't think church history at the time. I thought businessman, real estate developer. And I thought I could probably buy this building really cheap and make it into something special.
Well, there you go.
A couple months, about 2 years later, the building did sell for $700.
Oh, really?
At a tax auction.
Oh, you're kidding.
Come to find out, Thomas Sharp never printed there. And I later learned the story about that, which I hope to share with you today. But I sit there on Main Street. I thought, wow, this is a cool little town. And I got out my phone and I Googled history of Warsaw, Illinois, and there was not one. There's nothing. There's a chapter in Thomas Gregg's 1880 history of Hancock County, and that's about the closest thing I could find. And so I looked around, I talked to some people there, they gave me some information to reach the mayor. I later became really good friends with the mayor, Tiffany Murphy, and her husband, Chris Vest. They had me over for dinner multiple times, took me out on the river. It was really cool. And my experience with Warsaw, not only on my multiple trips back as I was doing research for this book, but an apex of it was spending the 2 nights in the bedroom of Thomas Sharp.
Oh, wow.
Now, my wife says, is that kind of like, you know, stand in the bedroom of Hitler or something? You know, was it dark or was it positive? But so when I started my work, I thought, you know, I just wanted to write about the period that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was there. The Saints, the Church, I'll call it from here on out, was there from 1839 to 1846 in Hancock County. But as I started to write about Warsaw and doing the research, I realized you couldn't tell the story of Nauvoo, you couldn't tell the story of Warsaw, you couldn't tell the whole story without understanding the historic background. And so I included a part of my book dealing with before the Saints got there. Have you ever wondered why they started in New York, went to Kirtland, went to Missouri, and then came back east into the heartland of the United States where they had been persecuted? Well, there's a story behind it, and it had to deal with a guy named Isaac Gallen, who became a member of the church and became Thomas Sharp's brother-in-law. So as I put my book together, I realized I had to include before the Saints got there and what were the economic and social and physical things, geographical things that are happening in the Hancock area, County area, then what happened during the Mormon period, and then what happened after. Because there's some exciting and interesting things that happened after the Saints left to that area, including the burning of the temple and the accusations that Thomas Sharp actually did that. So The first thing I did is, as I became friends with these people, and I should start right up front and tell you, the people in Warsaw today have nothing to do with what happened 180 years ago.
We can't blame them?
Yeah, we can't blame them. There's some good people. A lot of them are transplants. Mayor Murphy came from Denver. She had nothing to do.
Oh, okay.
Now, there's some historical, you know, legacy and traditions there, but... yeah, as Mormons, as Latter-day Saint tourists come, Warsaw is a safe place. It's a nice place. There's some really nice people, and they are only vaguely familiar. In fact, some of their history that they have in their local pamphlets are completely wrong. And when LDS tour buses pull into Warsaw, not a lot of them do, but some, they point to a building and say, well, this is where that happened, and it wasn't. This is where that happened, and it wasn't. So they have some historical inaccuracies. So... let's kind of set the table here.
Okay.
Before the Saints came to Nauvoo, and before Warsaw was even started, there was some tracts of land on both sides of the Mississippi. It doesn't sound politically correct, but on the Iowa side, Iowa was a territory, the government set up what was called the half-breed tract. And basically, it was for people, they would be given land if they had one parent that was American, Indian, Native American, and another one that was a white person. And that's why it was called half-breed tract. Well, the government gave this land away, and these Indians, half-breeds, whatever the term was in that time period, they didn't want it. So land speculators like Isaac Galen came and would give them pennies on the dollar, and he and his land development company had thousands of acres over on the Iowa side by Montrose, which became later the Zarahemla Stake. Well, on the other side of the river, by Commerce and Hotchkiss, which became Nauvoo.
Yeah, Commerce became Nauvoo.
So the United States government had 3.5 million acres. They had three different tracts. They called them military tracts or bounty tracts. And basically after the War of 1812, the United States government owed soldiers back pay, and they didn't have any money, but they had all this land on the western frontier. And that's what this military tract was. And essentially, if you were a soldier in the War of 1812, you would get 160 acres in one of these three military tracts. And one of them came through western Illinois. It covered 12 counties. And like I said, it was 3.5 million acres, so it was sizable. Well, the soldiers up in New England didn't want to move. Some of them didn't want to move, at least, to western Illinois, so they would sell their land for pennies on the dollar. So Isaac Galen and other land speculators had land on both sides of the Mississippi, and they heard about Joseph Smith being in Liberty Jail, and Isaac Galen wrote him and said, if you're looking for a place for your people, I'll make you a deal, you know, nothing down, the dollar, you know. So that's one reason I think the Saints moved to Quincy and then on up as soon as Joseph was escaped from Liberty to go up to Nauvoo. So these bounty lands. Well, Isaac Galen was the first, was a doctor over in just south of Montrose, and he started Iowa's first school. And he, even today, there's a state park called the Galen School State Park, and it's about 5 miles south of Mount Montrose, and they have a little mock-up of what his school looked like. And he was a medical doctor, and he had lost his wife, three wives in fact. So he was living over there, and he helped, he set up he platted the town of Keokuk, Iowa. And so if you go there, when most people go to Nauvoo to visit, a lot of people actually stay in Keokuk because that's where all the hotel rooms are.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, so we have these two tracts of land. Isaac Galen's looking for people to come and settle. At the same time, you've got a problem with the river. Okay, the river back then was like the interstate and the internet put together. Okay, there's not a lot of roads, there's no bridges, there's no railroads in the 1820s and 1830s in that part of Illinois. And so all the commerce is coming up and down the river. And all the news is coming up and down the river. The problem is when you get up to this part of the upper Mississippi, there were rapids. And it was absolutely significant on the everyday life. It was impactful on everyday life in Hancock County. These rapids ran for 12 miles from north of Warsaw up to almost to Nauvoo. the river dropped 25 feet. So it was, there were spots where the water was very quick and it was shallow, except in the spring runoffs. It's the end of May right now. And today, if you've seen anything about Nauvoo and Warsaw, it's flood stages right now. Mm-hmm. Well, in those period, in that part of the season every year, ships are, we call them ships. Ships are in oceans, boats are on lakes and rivers, but steamships would have to stop unless it was in high water season and have to offload their cargo to get over these rocks, these rapids. And it was a process called lightering. And they would offload the cargo. The boats would pass over the 12 miles of rapids. The cargo would be shipped up on land and then re-put on the boats and continue up the river. It was significant. In 1838 alone, about 300,000 tons of cargo was offloaded around the rapids. It cost $500,000. Just in transportation costs to get around the rapids in 1838. Then 1838, $500,000 was a lot of money.
Okay? Yeah, sure.
So the government says, we have got to do something. We are going to try to tame these rapids one way or another. Okay. They send up Henry Shreve, who the town of Shreveport, Louisiana was named after, and he surveys it. And later on in 1840, 1841, John Fremont, the famous explorer, comes and he looks at that for the government and says, how can we tame these rapids? And it was really key that John Fremont's in the area because he makes five trips back west.
Yeah.
In 1845, he comes to Salt Lake area with Kit Carson. And he maps it out and he names the area the Great Basin. And so when he comes back to the Warsaw area, Hancock County, Nauvoo area, Brigham Young, they're plotting, they're trying to figure out where they're going to go, and they use John Fremont's maps. They knew exactly where they were going. It wasn't really guesswork that they just happened to end up in the Great Basin. They used his maps.
Well, you know, we just talked about Mel Johnson, that they were thinking about going to Texas, and I know, yeah, they thought about Oregon as well, so that's kind of interesting.
I saw that interview, by the way. That's really good. So, again, everyday life. In March 17th, 1842, Joseph Smith gathers some sisters on the top of the top floor of the Red Brick store and organizes the Nauvoo Female Relief Society, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I tell this interesting story because he kind of organizes a meeting and he tells the sisters that they're going to vote on who their president's going to be. And they vote Emma Smith to be the president. Now, we don't vote on our Relief Society presidents today like that. So we use a term sometimes that Emma is an elect lady, because then we think, well, she's valiant, she's choice, she you know, one of the elect, but she was also elected. Emma Smith was elected. And during her opening speech, she says, we as a Relief Society are going to do things that are extraordinary. Okay. She says, when we hear of a boatload of saints on the rapids, we shall consider that a loud call for help. Well, she's talking about the Des Moines Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
That was everyday life. She would tell the children not to play on the rapids. It's dangerous. Okay. So these rapids became really important. It made Warsaw the center. It was the most northern of commerce in the region. It was the most northern port on the Mississippi before you hit these rapids. And so it grew. It was economically important. When the saints came up the Mississippi, they would have to stop in Warsaw and to go up to Nauvoo if they didn't stop in Quincy first to go on land up there. Okay, so we've got these rapids. Well, the river is really important as well. In fact, during the War of 1812, the United States government sent a guy named Zachary Taylor, Old Ironsides, or Old Hickory, I mean, it was his title. He became the 12th president of the United States. So he was a military leader out of St. Louis, and they came up and they built the first fort in the Warsaw area. That was called Fort Johnson, and he was there a few months, and they ran out of supplies and came back to St. Louis. That was the end of the War of 1812, about 1814. And then about 3 years later, they came up and they built Fort Edwards, okay, in Warsaw, about a mile north. And it's on this beautiful point overlooking three states, and a guy named John Wilcox comes, and he's from West Point. And Wilcox becomes important. in Latter-day Saint history, he's the guy nobody's ever heard of before. So he's a commandant of the military fort. And the fort's open from 1817 to 1824. And then it gets converted into a fur trading post owned by John Jacob Asper's American Fur Trading Company. But Wilcox stays around. During this time, there's Indian troubles. And there's a chief named Black Hawk. And they had this Black Hawk War in Illinois. And it never made it to Warsaw, but everybody was nervous about it. In fact, you had military leaders, young military leaders like Jefferson Davis, who later became the president of the Confederacy. He's right outside of Nauvoo and Warsaw, and he's chasing around Black Hawk along with Abraham Lincoln. Okay, So this Isaac Galen over in Iowa, he comes to the fort for protection. Well, he's been married three times, three wives have died, and John Wilcox has a little sister named Elizabeth. Galen's 45, Elizabeth's 24. And they get married. And this becomes important because here's what happens with Wilcox. When the fort is decommissioned, he stays around, he becomes a very wealthy businessman. And he has a ferry over to Alexandria. He has land, lots of land on South Warsaw along the water, and he builds his house. His first wife dies, Mary McKinney dies in 1836. Then he marries a 17-year-old girl named Hannah Hardy Wilcox. He builds an old stone house in 1838, and that's for sale right now. 701 South Water Street in Warsaw, $170,000. It's a beautiful little house. Wilcox dies next year in 1839. Now his brother-in-law is Isaac Galen. Hannah Hardy, 3 years later in 1842, marries Thomas Sharpe.
Ah.
So you've got Thomas Sharpe, who becomes a fiery anti-Mormon newspaper editor's brother-in-law, Isaac Galen. Now when Isaac Galen meets Joseph Smith, he believes the restored gospel. And Joseph Smith baptizes him and sends him on a mission back to Kirtland and then further east. So you've got Mormon missionary Isaac Galen and anti-Mormon fiery editor Thomas Sharpe, brother-in-law. Okay, I couldn't find that story anywhere. I had to go into the genealogy.
Oh, really? Oh,
now, wow. just for your clarification, Nauvoo's up here. Let's see if I'm watching this video. Nauvoo's up here. Carthage is 18 miles over here, and Warsaw is 18 miles below Nauvoo. It's almost a perfect triangle. Nauvoo, Carthage, Warsaw with the river. Nauvoo and Warsaw on the river. That's how it lays out. And so one of the things as I started working on Warsaw history was before I could get my book done, I said, you know, when I go to places, there's little visitor guides. And so I worked with Mayor Murphy and we put together, I wrote this and published it and they distributed it. It's just a little tourist guide. They have it at some of the visitor centers and it's got a map and tells some of the story of Warsaw. They've actually got that on the town website. Okay, check this out. Warsaw, Illinois, once the hotbed of anti-Mormonism, has a pamphlet about Mormon history that you can download for free in a PDF on their town website. Okay, they're good people. They have nothing to do with what happened. They're kind of actually baffled. My experience is, why do they have 200,000 or so members of the church come to Nauvoo and Carthage every summer for plays and this and that, and nobody stops at Warsaw? I say, because you don't have these big signs. You need these markers. Okay.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with author Brian Stutzman. You know, immigration is a hot topic in our news today, and it's interesting to look back at early Mormon immigrants, especially the European ones. Did they face discrimination?
There's a building still in Warsaw, 200 block of Main. It's an old brick building. It was called the Warren Hotel. And the story is that if you came there in November, December of 1841 with a strong British accent, the price of everything went way up, doubled, tripled, because they feared you were one of those Mormons from England in Joseph Fielding's party.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available at either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com, and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.